Thank you, Chair. Before I start, I must again for this opportunity to make the submission on the Correctional Services Annual Report. This is an important event in our calendar, and it's important for civil society to engage on this. The Department's annual report for the past year gives indeed the reason for optimism as illustrates in many regards significant advances made during the period under review. And in particular in terms of systems development, I think there is much to be pleased about and wish to congratulate the Department on its efforts in this regard. I must also apologize for not being present yesterday when the Department made submission to the committee. I'm sure it would have assisted us as well. I also wish to draw the committee's attention that the annual report on the judicial inspection for prisons is not yet available, even though it has been submitted to the ministry finally in the middle of June this year. And I think it is to some extent unfair to try to make an assessment after the Department performance in the absence of such a valuable report. With that being said, there is essentially one area of concern that we are raising in our submission, and that regards the safety of prisoners in South Africa. And the committee's attention is drawn to Section 12, 1B&E of the Constitution, as well as Section 2B of the Correctional Services Act, that requires prisoners must at all times be detained under conditions of dignity, and that they are protected from torture, cruel, inhuman, and degrading treatment. By its very nature, imprisonment places the right to dignity at risk, and is therefore all the more important to ensure the protection against cruel, inhuman, and degrading treatment. It is therefore reason for deep concern that the number of unnatural deaths rose from 30 to 62 in the past 2 years, and this is more than double the targets the Department set for itself, which was 29 for the year under review. The annual report unfortunately does not just aggregate the data in terms of the cause or the exact cause of death. Of equal concern is the number of assaults reported in the annual report, 1,822 in the year under review, and slightly higher than the target the Department set for itself. It should further be borne in mind that previous annual reports by the Office of the Inspecting Judge usually reported on average 2,500 complaints regarding assaults are lost by prisoners with independent prison visitors. In respect of assaults, it is noted that these include prisoner on prisoner, staff on prisoner, and prisoner on staff cases. The number of assaults should therefore be seen as an overall measure of safety in the prison system, whereas previous annual reports provided a breakdown in this regard, the 2006-07 report does not. The committee's attention is also drawn to the fact that South Africa ratified the UN Convention Against Torture in 1998, but has failed in substantive ways to meet its obligations. The Committee Against Torture, in its concluding remarks on South Africa's initial report, lamented the fact that the country has not yet criminalized the act of torture as is required by Article 4 of the Convention. It is of critical importance for South Africa in its efforts to prevent and combat torture to criminalize the act of torture. The use of common law to prosecute perpetrators of torture is regarded by the Committee Against Torture as insufficient. And for the purposes of this submission, we refer the committee to the definition of torture in Article 1 of the Convention, which requires that it must result in severe physical and mental suffering, it must be inflicted intentionally, it must be committed by a public official or at the behest or persons of a public official, and it excludes pain or suffering arising from or inherent in or incidental to lawful actions. I will skip to page 4, paragraph 8 of the submission. Given the high number of deaths in South African prisons, it was therefore with good reason that in 2006 the UN Committee Against Torture expressed its concern about the high number of deaths of persons in custody in South Africa and the lack of investigation thereof. And I quote, "The committee is concerned at the high number of deaths in detention and to the fact that this number has been rising. The committee is also concerned at the lack of investigation of alleged ill treatment of detainees and with the apparent impunity of law enforcement personnel. The State Party should promptly, thoroughly, and impartially investigate all deaths in detention and all allegations of acts of torture, of cruel, inhuman, or degrading treatment committed by law enforcement personnel and render perpetrators to justice in order to fulfill its obligations under Article 12 of the Convention. Deaths in custody have been a persistent problem in the South African prison system. The deaths being referred to here are the so-called unnatural deaths and referred to murder, accidents, and suicides. On the next page, page 5, chart 1 provides an overview of statistics related from Correctional Services annual reports for the period 2000 to 2007. These are expressed as a 100,000 ratio, that's the number of people in custody, but the actual figures are also given of the actual number of unnatural deaths. The most obvious trend is that the number of unnatural deaths have been fluctuating significantly over the 7-year period, rising from less than 10 per 100,000 to 40 per 100,000 and dropping again to 20 and climbing up back to 38 per 100,000 in the last year. The reasons for these fluctuations are not clear, and there does not appear to be a relationship with the size of the prison population and thus overcrowding. The safety situation in prisons can also be measured by the number of assaults reported by prisoners and detectives in the annual reports. Chart 2 presents the data, again expressed as the 100,000 ratio, as well as the actual figures. The number of assaults also appears to seesaw from 1 year to the next, although not as pronounced as the data in Chart 1. The general decline in the number of assaults is noted, although this may be a function of the accessibility and perceived effectiveness of the complaint mechanism available to prisoners. Again, there does not appear to be a relationship between the size of the prison population and overcrowding. It's of critical importance to see this data not for the bland statistics that they are, but as directly related to the rights and dignity of prisoners. The numbers are at levels indicating that a significant number of prisoners die annually due to unnatural causes, and that assaults are common. In the last year, there were on average 5 such deaths and 152 assaults reported per month. This cannot be regarded as satisfactory or effective of a prison system able to guarantee the safety of prisoners and staff. It should furthermore be recalled that the state has a duty to investigate all deaths and assaults taking place in prison, and this is simply described in Article 12 of the Convention Against Torture. Each state party shall ensure that its competent authorities proceed to a prompt and impartial investigation wherever there is reasonable ground for believe that an act of torture has been committed in any territory under its jurisdiction. Problems with investigations have been reported on several occasions, and there is substantial evidence indicating that the police seldom follow through on criminal cases made by prisoners against officials of the department. This situation perpetuates culture of impunity, a situation that actively undermines the good objectives of the department. Paragraph 15 lists a number of cases that CSPRI has been tracking since 2004. There are a number of deaths at Portsmouth Prison. Also, there are records of a mass assault at St. Albans Prison. There are also a number of deaths at Bartlepot Prison, as well as the very recent death at Krugersdorp. The above cases reflect a considerable time lapse since the incident took place, and it is uncertain what progress has been made with these investigations. It also appears that the National Prosecuting Authority has on a number of occasions declined to prosecute without explaining the reasons for such a decision. This is an issue that the UN Committee Against Torture expressed deep concern about. And I quote, the committee is concerned about the wide discretion and powers available to the National Prosecuting Authority with regard to criminal justice. Given the gravity of the offense of torture, it would not be unreasonable to expect an explanation from the NPA when it declines to prosecute these matters. In view of the above, we make the following recommendations. We respectfully submit that this committee liaises with its counterpart for justice and constitutional development regarding progress made towards legislation Given the high number of unnatural deaths as well as the high number of reported assaults, we propose that a thorough investigation be conducted by the Office of the Inspecting Judge into the underlying and direct causes for these deaths, as well as the findings of investigations conducted by the Paralympic Police. Such an investigation also needs to address the actions that have been taken by the department to deal with offending staff members. The value of such an investigation will lie in bringing greater transparency and being able to make recommendations on the prevention of theft and assault in prisons. Staff of the department need to be thoroughly trained on the act, in particular on the minimum use of force. In line with Article 10 of the Convention, it is important that the training of staff includes the absolute prohibition of torture and that this prohibition is included in the rules of instruction. The department needs to implement a general program raising awareness on the absolute prohibition of torture, cruelty, inhuman, degrading treatment or punishment. In this regard, it is important to disseminate the Convention Against Torture and the UN Committee Against Torture's concluding remarks on South Africa's initial report, as was recommended by the committee. In order to prevent torture, cruelty, inhuman, degrading treatment or punishment, prisoners must, upon admission, be informed of their rights, and in particular the absolute prohibition of torture. It is furthermore important that this information be reinforced on a continuous basis. Given the problems and general delays in investigation, it is recommended that progress on investigations dealing with assault and death be monitored by the judicial inspectors of prisons, to ensure that they are conducted in a prompt and impartial manner. In order to promote transparency and accountability, it is recommended that the results of investigations into assault and unnatural deaths be made public by the department and the judicial inspector in their respective annual reports. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Mr. Lindsay. Thank you very much for your presentation. Members, there is Mr. Munting's presentation. I will open the floor for members to ask, but let me start with a question. Mr. Munting, I see in your presentation you are very much critical of the issue of assault and treatment of inmates in the prison. I agree with you. But maybe if you can let me sketch a situation of correctional service. Here is an inmate doing life sentence or 23 life sentence. This inmate is disrespectful to the official. This inmate don't want to listen to instruction of the official because what we know is that this official, this inmate will say, "I'm having nothing to do," and we will go on and on and on and on. I am saying, it's wrong. I fully agree with you. Assault is very wrong. But what other proposals will you come up with when the official is facing with this kind of challenge in a prison? What will it be? I maybe have a question, but I will also give other members questions. You know what? We must be realistic when we are dealing with a prison situation in the country. I am saying it's totally unacceptable. But let us also find ways how we deal with such a situation. It's good as well to raise it, but let us also come up with answers. Mr. Shah and Mr. Dika and Mr. Sikor. Let me first take the three and then we'll start with main group.
Thank you, Chair. Let me point out the issue of challenges dealing with. We have heard of cases where all staff question would be more directed to the department, you know, they do in the department of the month that if you're on a high level of these reports, source and analysis, so they want to be a higher investigation, we can have for the audit of the interest in charge. Now what the department is telling us is, does the office of the interest in charge have the desire and time, capacity to actually conduct that investigation that is being recommended check?
Yeah, you are right, Mr. Shah. You know, we need that type of an explanation of the department. And this issue of the annual report that you have raised, we will take it up with the department. Why is it the annual report of the interest in charge not yet before the committee? And it was tabled in June of the natural aspect of staff. So we would be coming there and being fired for their kid for this reason, they don't care anything. They are in jail. Now, it is a challenge, because they ask because they are going to be fine when they are even killed. Because they are treated in Ireland. It means they have no respect of law. They are law officers, they kill them, kill anyone. So I think that would be the challenge that's facing to be stuck in dealing with that type of prisoner, common prisoner, when committed a serial offense outside and taking to an extended killing for this common prisoner. Everyone knows that we will face in the question of constraint on torture, constraint on people refusing to obey the law inside.
On page 2 of the presentation by the and information, I will share with the chairperson that the report says that the initial death has arisen from day 62 in the past 2 years. And again on paragraph 5, he reports that 1,822 number of assaults has been reported between the year 2006 and 2007. My request to Mr. Minchin, is it possible for him to have a breakdown on, in terms of their provinces and possibly centers in every province that Chief Cosmo or Butterfowl or Moto or whatever has had so many deaths and so many assaults reported? I see that he is in charge, he is very much in
charge. I don't think it's from the meeting to have the breakdown. The department must give us the breakdown. Yes, it's only a presenter on what is in the annual report. But then, it's in the annual report that Mr. Meeting gets the figure of 1,822. The Department of Correctional breakdown.
And the report is very much interested in all assaults by prisoners, by officials on prisoners. And nothing is very much said on assaults by prisoners on the officials. If we could have that breakdown again, because I happen to visit centers, and these cases are reported of prisoners assaulting the officials, and nothing is being reported in the chapter.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. If I can deal with your question and Mr. Flipper's question together, because I think they raise similar issues. And the question is really a very demanding one of what can be done. I think what one needs to emphasize without fail is the absolute prohibition of torture. We need to keep in mind that the Constitution is very clear on this, and this is a non-derogable right. It also carries the status of international peremptory law in that this sort of prohibition is absolute. Nobody can from under any condition from a state of emergency or a state of war or anything like that. And therefore, it then also goes that it does not matter how difficult and defiant and obstructionist a prisoner may be, there is no justification for the act of torture. So with that said, in terms of how to address this issue, the first thing that needs to be done is that the staff of the department needs to be properly trained in terms of what the Act says, what the Constitution says, what the Convention says, but they also need to be trained in terms of how to deal with extremely difficult situations and extremely difficult prisoners. And I agree with the sentiments from both of the people and the people that there are people inside our prison systems. Yeah, I think that our prison system would do present a real challenge for the management of prisons. I don't think anybody who studies prisons would not agree with that. You do get very difficult individuals. Therefore, it is important to investigate all cases. And what we submitted in our submission there is just a number of cases that we've been able to track and say something happened here and is not being investigated. Or if it is investigated, the results of those investigations are not being made public. And if we are to, if the media does not pick up, that those results are not being submitted to this committee either and becoming a public forum. So it is important to investigate all allegations without fail and to report on the results of those investigations in a public and transparent manner. I think it is important for the department, and we know that the department is busy with this, is to create those constructive interventions inside the prison system to reduce levels of violence. And there is research indicating that when people are kept busy on a daily basis, that it's not just a case of getting laid and watching TV, that violence levels reduce. There's also evidence available that the number of family visits are inversely related to the number of violent incidents. So there are practical measures that can be integrated into management to reduce the levels of violence. And then lastly, in June last year, South Africa signed the optional protocol to the Convention Against Torture. And it still needs to ratify and designate a national preventive mechanism. But what was pointed out to is the importance of visits to prisons. And therefore, from our side, we truly appreciate the efforts made by this committee in visiting prisons. It's been shown over and over in other jurisdictions the importance of visits in reducing torture. I think it is a continuous dialogue in terms of developing solutions, and therefore we are suggesting a comprehensive investigation. So it must be a solution that puts all stakeholders, especially
the I see that Mr. Shaw answered, but let me ask you a question on this one. You see, in the Act is saying that an official can use minimum force when we are dealing with an inmate. Now, this 1,822 reported assault, can it be such intervention as well, where an official has used minimum force? We are just last month as a to stress the issue of minimum force. I'm asking, is this thing not maybe this figure, not maybe part? Because each and every case in the department must be reported. I'm asking, maybe is that not the case? Is this a follow-up, Mr. Shah?
Yeah.
It's a follow-up on the very same thing. Indeed, it's a follow-up on the same thing. Or something else.
Okay.
Is it on this one? Yeah.
Thank you, sir. You have actually explained the sum of the issue is that if you have an enemy, you presented us with a definition of what constitutes a target in terms of the next after one of the cats. And bullet number four, you exclude. You make an exclusion. Again, what subject arising from walking having to involve the incident to lawful action. And Kim has drawn your attention to us, April, and I suppose the department has rules against how to engage when you intend to retrain. I haven't seen the true definition from the department to what they would consider to be reasonable physical action to retrain an inmate before the very serious way to his life. Maybe we need to have a look at that. Now, Mr. Hunting, you have made this exclusion, pain, suffering, arising from home, and so on. Can you elaborate a little on that? Actually, in your definition, what is your estimation would constitute lawful action and the suffering pain? Cases that is not necessary. But my question is
focusing on this point because we've got lots of challenges inside in our center. Many people are focusing on other things, but those things also go to help us. Thank you.
Thank you, Mengwe.
Not saying that this is clear. I'm not sure whether it's sufficient for the truth of this. The comment on page 5, right, to page 5. The presenter is saying, and thank you for the presentation. He's saying the general decline in the number of assaults is noted, although this may be a function of the accessibility and perceived effectiveness of the complaint mechanism. I would have thought that the DCS has a role to play in achieving these targets, which are set by the DCS itself. I don't know as to whether you'll agree with this. But also in relation to the accessibility of the effectiveness, in fact the effectiveness of the complaints mechanism. I don't know whether it cannot therefore play a role in also, or it is failing to play a role in reducing the unnatural thing. I just because for me the decline in assault but the increase in the unnatural death. It poses a challenge as to why is it happening like that. But say that the very fact that you're talking about unnatural death, that are inclusive of official events as the email. I just wanted to make that comment. But probably the violence that we are seeing in our communities out there. Do that result in human being killed, the doctor being killed, that was announced, all of us in my thoughts. Maybe it is still a transfer to prison. So it's either I kill you or not. I don't know. I just wanted to check as to whether it's possible for the prisoner in their own company to conduct a little bit of research on some of these things, because as they appear here, they are not scientific facts. They are persisting, important in tracing things that are happening in crime, but the effect of what is happening in our community vis-a-vis what is happening in our prison, if there is any relationship. Why is increase on these things, and we are seeing increase in violent crime outside, and that is subject to prison.
You are raising a very, very important issue that Mr. Mulukin must think of it. You know, when this murderers of Lucky Chude go into a prison, it's not as if they are dependent on when they go into the prison. No, they are changed people. They are violent people. And they don't have respect. The Baba Fika is raising the issue of killing of police. When they go in there, they don't have respect for any human life. They don't have respect. We are not, and we will never condone any assault or torture in prison. But we must be realistic when we are dealing with prison. This is raising a very important point. Baba Fika has also raised touch on the issue of the killing of police. We are dealing with violent people nowadays in prison. We are not dealing with like 10 years ago where people are stealing this and this. We are dealing with violent criminals nowadays. Mr. Mindy, you will have 5 minutes to respond, then we must go to the next presenter. Please, whatever room is here, we are going to take the South African Council of Churches next.
Thanks, sir. I'm not sure whether I'm going to get the other expression from the moment. Your organization, how do you describe minimum cost in the situation of prison?
Thanks for that.
you, Chet. It's a pleasure. Your question is essentially the same as the question that was a little after that, what is the number of pulse. I just want to come back to Nkosi Kodo's question in terms of the data. I just shortly to say that all the data that have been presented here are directly drawn from the annual report as they are reported there. I also noted that in the past, the department used to provide a more detailed breakdown, for instance, like suicides versus assaults and accidents and so on. Now we only get this one longer figure, and this makes it difficult for us. I did look back into some reports dating, I think, around about 2001, and in terms of the assaults there, it looked, and I'm not able to take it out, so for around about 2001, it looked like approximately 20% of the assaults were committed by staff of the department. Whether this is still the same, I really can't say, but the department must provide us with that information. The question on minimum force, I think firstly we welcome the amendment to the Correctional Services Act that now compels the department to report all incidents of minimum force to the Office of the Inspector General. I think that is a very, very positive move. So the question from Mr. Sharon Bloom, what is minimum force? I think one needs to look at this essentially on a case-by-case basis, and therefore again points to the importance of proper investigations. We're giving a figure of 1,822 assaults. We don't even know who committed those assaults, whether it's prisoners on prisoners, prisoners on officials, officials on prisoners. And this is one part of the problem. But if the department is to deal with this problem in a comprehensive manner, it is important that each and every incident is investigated and that they make a conclusion on it, whether the what happened there indeed exceeded the use of minimum force. We can't just talk about these failures, we need actual facts. The benefit of these investigations would then be that lessons learned from that can be incorporated into the training of the department staff so that they can deal effectively within the bounds of the law with the use of minimum force. But as a basic requirement, the force is to be used in order to stabilize a situation. In other words, if a prisoner presents particular difficulties and then he needs to be handcuffed in order to prevent any harm to himself or an official or cause damage to property, then that is what is actually necessary. But we've seen the use of force being far exceeded. We've heard numerous reports of mass assaults of prisoners taking place in Albans. There was recently reports from Devon Westville. There's a report from Kirchdorf in April. So this far exceeds the use of minimum force. And it's not directed at an individual who is presenting difficulties. This was directed at the entire prison population. And I think that is really problematic. Ms. Nguyenia, if I understood the question correctly, yes, you could have commented on many normal issues emanating from the annual report. We deliberately chose to focus on death and assault discussions. Previous years, we provided very comprehensive reports. And from our other work, our submission on the Correctional Services Amendment Bill, you remember, we provided a very comprehensive submission. We decided this time that we were only focused on deaths, assaults, and torture. Obviously, we remain committed to the work of this department and this committee, and we will provide additional support as far as possible. But I think it is important within the light of the fact that South Africa has ratified the Convention against Torture, and has failed in material ways to live up to the obligations of the Convention that we need to attend to this issue. Just to add to that, it's also very pleasing to announce that the Human Rights Commission has established a Section 5 committee on torture and the additional section of prison fees represented on that committee as well as other stakeholders. Ms. evidence from the Electrical Law Society that describes the internal complaint mechanism as ineffective, and people really don't want to use it because they just don't get any satisfaction from it. And the point I'm making is that this may be a reason, I'm still not saying it's the reason, but it may be a reason why the number of assaults are coming down. Whereas this, in practice, is not subject to the reporting of the victim. It has to be recorded and reported to the Office of the Inspector General. So and that may explain that variation between the two. The hand national deaths only refer to prisoners, not staff. The information we presented here are not essential, but it is the information that is coming from the annual report. But it again comes back to the issue, and there were numerous questions raised around bias and levels of violence in prison. And this is not something that people resolve quickly. And that's why we are asking for a comprehensive investigation into the immediate, but as well as the underlying causes and how to manage violence in prison. Because it's not, and I admit our focus is very much prisoner rights oriented, but we are fully aware of the enormous stresses and strain for the department staff as we work under these conditions, where we can expect an assault by a prisoner at any moment, depending on what the level of tension is in that facility. So yes, we do need more information in order to understand this problem. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Mr. Munting. Now, thank you very much for the submission. Mr. Munting is always here, and let me tell you, Mr. Munting was very much interested in calling me to say he wants to present the document and to participate in this public hearing. So we really appreciate Mr. Munting's involvement in the Department of Correctional Services. Very, very good presentation and point that Mr. Munji have raised here this morning again. We want to thank Mr. Munji for everything that he has said this morning. And we are not going to throw away the document. We are going to work on the document because he has also raised a lot of serious concerns. And it's for us, as this portfolio committee, to take it. Thank you very much, Mr. Minister.
Thank you.
Yeah, let me welcome now our second presenter, Reverend Chief Vermeulen, the South African Council of Churches. Reverend, you are welcome to the portfolio committee on correctional services. It's exactly 10 o'clock, you have 15 minutes, Reverend, to present. And after that, then the members of the committee will post some questions for clarification on your presentation. Over to you, Reverend.
Good morning, Chair. Good morning, members of the Board of Directors. I've been speaking from our General Secretary, Betty McHugh, who is currently on leave, and just to indicate that the difficulty that the Parliamentary Office finds itself in is that on leave, the General Secretary has advised that we please take the invitation seriously and you make this response. So, in one sense, I must say to you that our office program has been somewhat hijacked by the General Secretary, but I must indicate to you that we are grateful to have received the invitation to make a comment submission on your annual report, and we thank you for that request to do so. Just to indicate you that the Council of Churches is a facilitating body of concerning denominations. It was founded in 1968 and includes amongst its members Protestant, Catholic, African, Independent or African Institutes Churches, Pentecostal, Orthodox Churches. And it is a body that comprises roughly 15 million members and adherents. The South African Council of Churches is committed to expecting jointly through the program, particularly confirmation, the witness of the churches, function of national interest in the debate, and of course, the concerns of crime and violence, and particularly the work of institutions that care for society's members who do violate law and who do, in the definition of a spiritual work sense of crime being not just a violation of laws, but break down the social, moral, individual, relational fabric of society, deeply concerned about the work of the correctional services, and you do carry out thoughts and our prayers for the work that you do. And so that's sort of as we make this presentation today, so. We need to indicate as well that the Council of Churches does not directly per se take responsibility for the chaplaincies of the church. These are different instituted bodies that various churches handle by themselves and what is the church's unity commission. And perhaps this is an opportunity for the Council of Churches and perhaps portfolio committee also to engage a particular committee on its organization of the chaplaincies, and particularly on the chaplaincies for correctional service. I'll take a slightly different tack from the previous speaker, so an indicator of our presence here is perhaps defined more around yesterday's MCDPS statement. The previous time we were asked to make a comment around here was at the budget speech, and we indicated our problem with making input into various portfolio committees' requests at the time of the budget, particularly because the Council of Churches and Churches have had great difficulty engaging Parliament on the budget appropriations, and particularly at that stage when the budget appropriations, the vote 20, I think, of the portfolio committee, were asked to comment. So, in one sense, we're not going to be differing too much from those comments. We hope that the comments that we make will reinforce our previous comments. But simply to highlight again, in the context of the FCBPS statement delivered yesterday, in which we are budgeting and spending within a context of unplanned surplus, this is an ethical concern, and of course we find ourselves, and I think you find yourselves in all other departments, putting those constraints itself. It's interesting to note, and I think it's a cursory glance, the overall expenditure, and the fact that your average appropriation of expenditure for 2006-07 over against 2005-06 has increased by margin by about 2%, I think. Now, the Council of Churches has indicated that the problem with interacting with various departments, particularly around the unfulfilled mandate of the Constitution, and secondly, we've given it to your attention, is again the unfulfilled mandate of Section 77 of the Constitution, which clearly intends that Parliament should have a money or amendment power consistent with the role of its voice of the people and of certainly on the ground needs in society and so forth. Constitutional Court certification judgment of the Constitution held that national legislation should give effect in Section 77 and certain other suspended clauses to be adopted within a reasonable period. And so as we now conclude our 30th year of democratic government, more than a decade since the enactment of our constitution, this amendment remains an outstanding legislative requirement of our constitution. It's imperative, we argue, that Parliament assume its rightful and intended role with respect to the authorization and oversight of public spending, and in this case, spending to enhance the work of correctional services. The people fund of which the Council of Churches is a founder member, and second was Frank Walker, the South African NGO Coalition, and the Congress of South African Trade Unions have made recommendations for configuration of money for the amendment powers that aim to maximize Parliament's role in budget finalization without compromising unnecessary executive capacity to manage regular and coherent budgeting process. If the executive continues to neglect the constitutional mandate, we would strongly urge Parliament to draw and enact its own money goals amendment legislation, and in that sense perhaps encourage the trade of correctional services to take that seriously as a right to defense against the Constitution. I hope you don't admit this. If perhaps the power of correctional service should be used to threaten those who have not engaged the requirements of the Constitution, that's possible. Those are the Ubuntu chips that you can use. Don't report it. Overall allocation. So the overall allocation for the electoral surplus, we know that it increased by 9.2% in the nominal term in the year previous, while the estimated 9.02% for the remainder of the MTEFD expenditure framework has marginally increased expenditure by only 2% for the past $35 million. Obviously, this is alarming in the light of inflationary costs, and while the saving on the footsteps does not bode well for qualitative human resource and structural changes. Within a modest expansionary trend, the public spending and competing demand on public resources, this may be more major, but gives further concern in the light of role-known movers and fiscal surpluses. We hope, however, that by developing more creative, and particularly the churches have drawn principled responses on favour of restorative justice initiatives that emphasise mediation, restoration, and restitution over the relatively expensive options of incarceration and control. This will ultimately permit the congressional services budget to divert more resources to other critical areas of the budget. Congressional services budget finances 7 major program areas: administration, security, corrections, care, development, social integration, and facilities. Within the budget, there's a marked shift away from the spending on facilities. After several years, we see spending and finance new detention facilities. Spending on facilities increased at an average nominal rate of more than 3% annual from 2003-2005, and this now drops to 4% for the next 3 years. Spending on inmates training and development also slowed down dramatically from 15.8% to 6.5% in 2005-2006. The rate of spending growth accelerated for all other programs, most dramatically in the area of corrections, which now jumps from an average annual fee increase of 7.6% in the previous 3 years to 28% during the MTEF period, due largely to the substantial increase in 2007-08 startup finance and operational costs associated with 4 new prisons. We recognize that even with the opening of 4 new correctional institutions and the addition of 4,000 beds, the prison system will remain critically overcrowded. We share the portfolio committee's expressed concerns about the situation. Nevertheless, we broadly support the move away from spending on construction of more detention facilities, provided that this is accompanied by the introduction of alternative correctional strategies and the reallocation of resources to monitoring and improving the rehabilitation and integration aspects of corrections. However, a close examination of spending patterns within the various programs prompts important questions about the budget's capacity to achieve these goals. Our concerns fall into 4 categories, and we will keep to these individually: overcrowding and criminal justice strategy, community service monitoring and rehabilitation, inmate care and aftercare. Overcrowding and criminal justice strategy. The budget anticipates a 41% average increase for group and services, which links in part to an expected increase in the inmate population. That was last year, by the way, budget report. Although not explicitly stated, it may be inferred from the overcrowding reduction figures that the department is forecasting a 2% annual increase in the number of inmates. While this is roughly consistent with the rate of growth of the general population, it remains a matter of some concern, especially in light of extreme overcrowding already experienced in the correctional services system. We believe that more creative strategies of restorative justice that build community skills in the mediation and resolution of specified social problems need to be explored. These, we believe, potential to reduce both the number of inmates and the portion of the population. No mention is made of the proposed changes to the minimum sentence legislation. Should such changes be implemented, they would also help to alleviate the overcrowding situation. Without a change in this legislation, level of overcrowding currently at 72.1% could actually increase rather than diminish as is anticipated. Secondly, the liberalism, monitoring and rehabilitation. The budget provides no indication of funds are being allocated to develop and compile robust statistical data on recidivism and its causes. While the budget proposal states that correctional services' central focus during MTEFD is rehabilitation, there is currently only anecdotal evidence in circulation regarding recidivism. There is no basis to assess the effectiveness of rehabilitation programs, and the benchmarking of recidivism is identified as a future objective for 2016-17 financial year. surely this should be a higher priority for the department. We would hope to see that budget recognized need for data collection and analysis regarding factors that contribute towards recidivism, as does with regard to the HIV prevalence, explicitly allocate funds for this purpose. This would enable the underlying causes of recidivism to be addressed more effectively and facilitate the evaluation of rehabilitation initiatives. Similarly, the long-term strategic policy outlined in the document envisioned the mobilization of communities around issues of social cohesion, social justice, moral, ethical values, socio-economic development. Today, there are 36 new centers of excellence identified. However, there seems to be no allocation to finance joint ventures with civil society organizations that would promote genuine community mobilization, unlock resources, generate additional data to analyze, understand, and halt the cycle of crime and violence. In Medicare, there were 186,639 inmates detained in August 2004. So assuming that this was a reasonable snapshot of the prison population, this means the department is spending roughly 10 rand per inmate per day. We commend the department's commitment to the introduction of 3 meals a day for inmates, but remain concerned that this amount is inadequate to provide nutritionally balanced meals 3 times a day. It's not clear from the narrative whether additional funding set aside for nutritional services in terms of care program will be used to supplement the administrative expenditure. We applaud the plan to extend the HIV/AIDS prevention and treatment program in prisons to provide care and support for affected staff and attendants, to provide voluntary counseling and testing, and to undertake an HIV prevalence and knowledge attitude and behavior survey. We trust that the political restrictions imposed on the grants that were allocated on the U.S. President's emergency plan will not prevent the department from pursuing a balanced, multifaceted HIV/AIDS program in prisons that promotes the use of condoms as a legitimate and effective option to prevent transmission of the virus. In general, spending on prison well-being will increase at an average of 11% per annum over the next 3 years, suggesting a substantial real per capita increase. However, we know that while 2005 fixed budget provided for a number of psychological care sessions to increase by more than 80%, the number of spiritual care sessions, and this is largely the church's concern, increased by only 3%, and social work sessions by less than 1%, despite a cost of 5% increase in such sessions. Furthermore, the number of spiritual care sessions actually declined, so next year's target actually represents a decrease on the 2003-2004 level. The allocation for spiritual services is especially small, representing a tiny fraction of total spending on the personal well-being of offenders, on average 2.8% during the period 2001-2002 to 2007-2008. While this growth modestly in 2005-2006 to 3.1%, it slipped back again to 2.7 and 2.9% in 2006-07 and 2007-08 respectively. We believe that more resources should be devoted for spiritual care of inmates. 155,000 spiritual care sessions were envisaged for 2005-2006 or less than one per prisoner per annum. General consultation with certain correctional service chaplains indicate that the Sycamore G project, which contains useful principles of restorative justice in personal care, is a firm favorite over against for argument's safety hotlines, and I think it's checked it, I'm not mistaken. In addition, it is vital to maintain adequate staffing levels. A number of prison chaplains have retired in recent years and have not been replaced. Additional support is required for spiritual model development workers who have the capacity to complement the work of chaplains and to advance restorative justice initiatives, both for the spiritual workers in society and within the prison. Finally, the social integration, which I believe was previously termed after care, for released offenders remains the most poorly supported aspect of the correctional services budget, comprising less than 4% of the total budget. Moreover, nominal per capita spending on after care remains essentially static, increasing by less than 1% between 2004-2005, 2007-2008. Real spending per capita has therefore diminished throughout the MPEF. In the absence of a better resource and more effective social integration program that meets the real needs of released offenders, recidivism is likely to remain an attractive option to many former inmates. The data provided on financial assistance to released offenders marks a stark illustration of the inadequacy of the program. Previous reports indicate that 600 2,990 was awarded to 7,530 needy offenders during 2004. This amounted to a mere 21.83 per person, on average, which is very efficient for taxi pay from the prison. So we propose that the social reintegration program be dramatically expanded to facilitate and ensure that former prisoners have genuine alternatives aimed at the prevention of at least significant reduction of recidivism. To this end, the SSDC commends the department to restore, sorry, the department to the department to restore the justice initiatives throughout the country and particularly the Western Cape, where a program in conjunction with the Department of Community Safety has transformed former street committees into peace and safety committees. These committees are well equipped in community problem solving skills, prepared to assist with reintegrating offenders back into communities. We believe too that it is essential for legal resources to be allocated to promote employment opportunities as well as support for community-based training institutions. And so we suggest that the department explore the possibility of funding halfway houses, either as a government initiative or through joint ventures with local community and faith-based organizations such as the IA Kuruleka Prison Ministry. To this end, so we ask these thoughts, comments, as a commission, in thanking you for presenting us to comments on your 2017
report. Reverend, Vermeulen, thank you very much on behalf of you are presenting this document on behalf of the South African Council of Churches. Very good, well-researched document. With a lot of issues that I'm sure that the members of the committee will ask some questions for clarification. But let me also welcome in our midst the Minister of Correctional Services and the Commissioner, National Commissioner of Correctional Services. Minister, you are welcome into our meeting. Commissioner, you are welcome into our meeting. And also to participate in the meeting, let me give you that permission to participate in the meeting. If there's anything that you want to add and to clarify, you are welcome to do so. Yeah. I see a hand, Mr. Shah, and up for now.
Thank you for your interest. I'm going to make a few statements and expect to come from the philosophical background of the time. It will be interesting to see your response. Perhaps in some way you can contribute to our students. And my question that I was asked to you is not based on technical. It's not technical question based on anything. My son is philosophical, but it is something that we need to grasp. The fact that we give is actually a dumping ground product where society can fit and where it fits. That is the reality. We cannot realistically expect the Department of Correctional Services to put right what put our part idea in society as well as responsibilities that the cost of the country takes. What I'm trying to say is, do you not think that the challenges within the DPS, and I want to be devoted, will never be resolved until such time that the criminal justice system partitions that are determining us to keep number one. Until such time that society, prisoners are productive society. Until such time. Now I'm not an idea. I think they will obviously do their best. But the underlying cause of this crime, they are the fact that contributes to crime, they don't know. Responsibility by society and by family and community. Those are you are arguing, for example, you say that we share the population and isn't a question about the people, whether we brought people to move away from sending on constructing more detention facilities. In other words, you are arguing for we don't want more gay and more gay. We have to say. But the fact of the matter is, more and more people are going to come to this facility for whatever reason. Now, overcrowding, which means overcrowding, because there's no scarcity. Overcrowding will be a factor. then we have required budget, the rest of the problems that will come over our week. So how happy is then that we need to have a conceptualist or old view approach to crime and punishment? You also, for example, you rightly raise concern about the fact that the decision that we receive, I mean, who they receive is not sufficient enough. Then they have to obey or they raise that concern. That they get premium pay, but it's not nutritious. And you raise another concern about HIV/AIDS. I think as people reach out to another question, why do we raise concern about inmates and their nutrition? How do you address the issue of the victims now, who has lost the bread of women, if somebody kills someone and says, who has the sole breadwinner? What about their nutrition? Who takes care of that? Do we have to reach out to their parents? Why advocate the right to prison? We thank you for coming. That has nothing to do with it. You address the issue of AIDS. Now, someone raped a young woman, an innocent woman, and the person who's the criminal is a HIV positive. Do we have structures in society? There's a state who's filling its role, there's a society who's filling its role, and for that, what then is the problem that's affected by the HIV? These are philosophical, not very philosophical, but actually, these are the real questions we need to grapple with. So, but what about the responsibility of state, government, criminal justice system, and that they can't pay?
Thank you, Mr. Shah. Dindi Chukunga, Bishop Kolo, and Baba Fee.
Yes, no, thank you, Professor. And I think I need to thank the FACC presenter for such a thought-provoking presentation. I'm the daughter of a pastor, so I'm a Christian.
You're not a communist.
I'm not. So I listen carefully. So listen, I think we speak of overcrowding and managing. I listened carefully and I thought the presenter was going to say something about the prevention of crime and the role of the church. Because personally, I do think that good as Mrs. I say that we are at the end of the system when we receive. We can't say no. But somewhere, some institutions have to play some role. That of preventing crime. And I think the church has an important role to play. Because I will personally think that there is a relationship between poverty and crime. But I also believe that there is a relationship between the loss of Ubuntu and crime. And in that regard, I think the church has an important role to play to prevent crime. And if indeed we are seeing this increase in the number of population in our prison, I wouldn't exclude the church from probably not playing a very significant role in the system. Exactly. Then we will be talking about the budget and so on and so forth. But really, I think the SACC has an important role to play in preventing crime. Then the churches are empty, might be doing something. But I just want to put in there. I think I agree fully with you with regards to the issue of monitoring rehabilitation in terms of recidivism. And I also agree that I don't think we have enough systems in place in the department for now to monitor this vis-a-vis our success in rehabilitation of crime.
Thank you,
Senator
Chukunga. Very short. Your mic, please.
On page 964, HIV AIDS program increase. Has both the use of condoms as a legitimate and effective option to prevent transmission
Thank you.
extended to us. We said that this is not any way increasing the population, because people are dealing with still a percent, not the total population of prisoners. There are offenders in prison. It is only those who committed offenders who are dealing with the minimum sentence. And therefore, it is no more, therefore, increasing the population of prisoners than delaying specifically with 0%. Also, the question of recruiting and rehabilitation. Now, I'm wondering how do you sustain the way the system that is implemented does not help in carrying security. What elements do you see the best members of the community that is going to come back to where the community is going to come back? Don't you think that that way, in the whole of the community, to accept that the people of the community to also the task force of the great very important role? Because at the end of the day, people who commit offenses are people who are living amongst us, who are in the community, who are relatives, and therefore, people who are relatives, therefore, who are sincere in trying to persuade to win them over, not to stigmatize them as a company. So the test that I play is a lot.
Thank you very much, Baba Pika, in many ways, and then go to the
thank you for the public and also our students in the CDC. On the last page, on the aspect of the CDC, I would like to get to the When the South African chief said, we believe that it is equally important for additional resources to be allocated to promote employment. I want to know the question that if they want to get the additional of resources from their recommendation, on the resource that they have right now, can you tell us that how many inmates that will get employment if they are talking about additional of resources in terms of the allocation to promote the employment?
Thank you, this will be the last one because we must move on to the next one. The next one will be for the meeting.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm interested to read the question on developing on social reintegration. And the presenter here says that the amount of $600,990 was only awarded to 27,530 needy offenders. And my question is, what criteria was used to define needy offenders?
Thank you. Again, I don't think the relevant here can really say or define what is a needy. It's part and parcel of the annual report. So they got it from the annual report. And
And I don't think that the relevance here can define that we must ask the Department of Correctional Services in Mozambique, because it's in the annual report. It's just taking it out of the annual report and presenting it here to us. But over to you,
Mr. Chair, as a member of the Portfolio Committee, I thank you for your questions. The insights of the deep, starting with the philosophical and theological questions, my initial response is I do not have all the answers to that, and I think it's good. In one way to say is I think that the bishop has raised the issue of the role of the church and the question of prayer. I think there's a two-edged sword here, sir, is that there are areas in terms of which the spiritual community, faith communities have responsibility, particularly the churches. And I think in another sense, the portfolio committee has its responsibility as government, as the other part of that sort to do that. So I'm sitting in a very interesting position, I think, in the use of engaging the role of the inheritance of the church within society, to respond to your question about the effectiveness and do we need a whole new philosophy of crime and punishment? I thought that's one of the insightful questions that would be important to deal with, I think, between portfolio committee and broader society. My answer to that is that this is not the first time I've engaged, I think, the very early stage of the life of the government, way back in 1996, Mr. Bloom may remember, that I've been an ardent proponent within the churches of the concept of restorative justice, which is, in a sense, freshly, yes, is an adequate sense of the kind of criminal justice system that we've had, that we've inherited from colonial era times as well as from apartheid times. Is there perhaps thought that it's been given to what the reconceptualizing of the criminal justice system? And my response in terms of certainly the struggles of the churches in proposing and exploring dealing with crime, as I mentioned earlier, crime is not just the infraction of law in the sense of the church. Crime is the breakdown of relationships within communities, it's the breakdown of relationships essentially between people and families. And the question about the criminal justice system is how effective is it in talking about a justice that deals with bringing together with healing or making whole again that breach in relationship which crime causes. So the initial question, maybe it's simplistic, but I think I need the portfolio committee to engage, is that a system which is essentially punitive, essentially which we've inherited as a catastrophic justice system, which doesn't say you have injured the state, you have hurt the state, we will put you over our knee and for X wrong, we will slap you this hard, is in essence, I'm reducing the kind of issues of catastrophic justice system, saying that we need to look at what are the alternatives? What are the alternatives internationally available in terms of dealing with the impacts of that time? Because to that extent, way back in 1996, the churches had already begun to, and my exploration with the issue of the importance of justice, saying that are there elements in society that show a different way of dealing with healing the breach of what is wrong? And as we explore certain indigenous systems, that we explore the concept of Ubuntu that was being utilized in terms of the Inkundas and the Lakotlas that we used prior to so-called colonial settlement in South Africa. We were saying that there appears to be elements that can be utilized in a criminalized criminal justice system that needs to transform the merely punitive and the merely incarcerative outcome of justice in terms of dealing with the effect of crime done. And of course, this in answer to the other question, would then take very seriously the role of the victim. And I think I don't need to explain to many of those here who know of the traditional African justice system, that if you stole a chicken or if you caused any infraction in a community, the head of that community, including the spiritual head of that community, together with families affected, not just the perpetrator, would be brought together to answer to the community if what needs to be done. So the ultimate outcome would be the restoration, the restitution of what has been what's called the breakdown of the relationship in that community. And we simply saying that churches, a resource to justice together with Ubuntu and indigenous principles that bring that kind of focus, hold something of a answer that is more restitutive in dealing with the breakdown of relationships, more than just the criminal justice system, which is impersonal in terms of dealing with crime, the perpetrator, the victim, and incarcerating the perpetrator and giving a faceless identity or to the victim who never interact with each other, either on an individual basis or even on a community basis. So it is a need for exploring African churches, would say yes, it's very important that we explore. I mean, certainly the social traditions, I think, of our religious communities around Africa bear certain traditions to just a classic criminal justice system. The Gacaca and Rwanda party would take the same example. So, in a nutshell, there is a need for us to explore a alternative to the current criminal justice system in terms of crime and punishment. The churches have been engaged on that, and I think religious organizations have been. I think it's important to point out as well is that I think the entire social justice cluster in 2000 sat down to have a discussion. Social development, departments of justice, correctional services, some of the police services had that. And perhaps it's time to say is it important to look at dealing with crime, not just with the churches and society, but in a broad intersectoral mechanism in the justice system to come back to ask that question together. I would think it's time to pick up that the fact that we had in 2000, if not 2007, and perhaps it's appropriate time to take that forward. In terms of the issue of the I think that clarified the issue, I hope, of Ubuntu and prevention as well. The justice system does not deal with prevention, just always coming off the fact. I think this is what we've been saying. Can we set a sense of terms how we deal with the breakdown of crime as a breakdown of social fabric in a way that will create for us a moral and ethical and social value that will make us think twice about infringing the rights of others. But I think more than just infringing the rights of others, in the essence of understanding just the dignity of the Constitution that we have, the right to respect, of working on a basis of trade communities, with our education departments, with all departments in terms of how we deal with this respect and dignity one another. And yes, it has to do with security. It has to do with the human security issues that we deal with. The rights to employment, the rights to work, and the access to that work as dignity within our country, all aspects are tied together within the issue of justice. And I think if we find a move towards understanding how these relate to justice and how these relate to the infractions of the rights of others, I think it's a discussion that might well move towards the decrease in the population of the Department of Correctional Services and our servants, obviously. I think certainly in terms of the bishop, I simply would want to say is the Council of Churches has held for long in terms of dealing with HIV and AIDS in the church, not only within the population. Of course, it is important for us to pray about the suggestion. And it's important for us to pray about national conflict, to pray about social conflict, about war, and certainly about the conflict of diseases we have that seems to be a pandemic in our country. We've never said, don't pray about it. We've never just said, use comments. We've come up with a very clear, realistic analysis of saying that it's a situation. And we just expect people pray, but don't give them guidelines in terms of how to deal with the issue of sexuality and power as power. Because I think a lot has to do with the issue of understanding sexuality as power and the use of prophylactics in the reality that where people who, in the notion that we have in the pandemic of HIV and AIDS, engaging in open sex without condoms, is going to lead us into a slippery slope of social decline. And so we're simply saying is that to protect society, to protect ourselves, as much as we would say that the ideal is faithful engagement in sexual activity, abstinence has been promoted by the council churches and its churches, faithfulness in its relationships. And we certainly not a book, I think, that is don't use condoms. We said he's condomized too, if you need to engage in sexual activity and know what the risks are, or what the risks are. So it's about prayer and about engaging in real social preventative mechanisms. So I think the last response that I want to make was about the minimum sentences and the justice system of recidivism and the rehabilitation output. Simply this is that it is clear for us that without options within society or within the institutions of government provide for the integration of offenders into society. It is for many, and I think it has been borne out by your statistics, is that the high level of recidivism of offenders returning to prison is undesirable. And what we are saying is that a mechanism to assist civil society, faith communities, for us to work together to monitor that form of recidivism under the current system might be helpful if you chose an alternative system like using the criminal response of justice in the prisons to measure the extent to which that contributes towards the cutdown of recidivism. But we don't have those big facts and figures. We don't have a mechanism simply of a relationship, a community partner correctional service relationship to be able to engage on those kind of details, monitoring, observation, as well as proposing creative alternatives. And I simply am speaking on behalf of Council Church of saying that it is well-prepared, it is eloquent, that it is willing to engage the partner correctional services on taking those kinds of alternatives for creative solutions and to become a criminal justice system forward. I thank you.
Thank you very much, we must go to the next presentation now. We are not going to take any follow-up questions. But Reverend, you raised on your last page a concern, and I agree with you that you are seeing a number of prison chaplains have retired in recent years and not been replaced. I think that the Department of Correctional Services must take it very seriously to replace these people, because it's very important that these people might be replaced with chaplains. But Reverend, I also want to say that, you know, we are expecting from the churches, all the churches, to really do the point that Ms. Cindy Chikunga raised about prevention of it's good and well that we are having this lot of prisons, new prisons that are going to be built and all this. But let's keep these people out of prison.
and not preach to them when they are in prison already. You know, yesterday Baba Pika, Mr. Pika, was telling me that he asked his church for a slot of an hour to talk to the congregation and to tell them about crime prevention and what is the consequences of being in prison. And that is very good. If the churches, we are also saying from our side now, if you can also convey this open invitation. We are ready to go to churches anywhere, this portfolio congregation, to really talk to the congregation in all the churches, so that it must help to keep these people out of prison. Some of them are really committing economic offenses. Poverty is an issue. But I think really the church can play a very, very important role. The church has helped us in the past to fight against apartheid and overthrow apartheid. So I don't think that the church can be silent now when we are faced with this type of a problem of correctional services, inmates overcrowding and all that. But thank you very much, Reverend, for the presentation, and you must convey the message that we really appreciate it, that the South African Council of Churches always ready and always willing to appear before the portfolio committee and make their contribution.
Chair, one last message. I really ask simply to keep the communication lines open, and particularly I'm thinking of finding the traditional services week and your details. Feed us with the information that we can certainly keep these onto the churches. We have only heard, I think, in the past, the week after Corrections Week, that it was Corrections Week. But that's the kind of information we can pass on to our churches timelessly and not a week before the annual report or the budget meeting. That's the week.
Thank you very much. Yes. No, the minister is here, the national commissioner is here. They will certainly do that. Members, we are doing on our program is Kokuli. And the last presentation will be from Kulisa, because apparently Public Service Association has not pitched up and they are not, maybe they are not coming, but that's fine. Because we are going to finish at our first. But let's invite the General Secretary of COP Group, Mr. David Westwick, and the delegation from COP Group. Sir, you can come and sit here. You can come and sit here and do your presentation. Yes. So these are other concerns the members can also move up and assist the General Secretary. You see, you can't use the General Secretary alone in France. Yes. And you are sitting there at the back of the seat, you will be fired if you don't have the device. Mr. Westwood, thank you very much for being here presenting your paper, like Cochrane did, without any preaching and preaching over to you, so that I will give you a lot of time for you to preach. Thank you very much, Chairperson. Let me also greet the Honorable Minister, all the members of the portfolio committee, the guests who are here, and to all the members. First, we would like to highlight to you that we need to raise the issue that for us, always we value the opportunity for you.
wanted, and as far as the wanted is concerned, I'm not of course, he would want to say that he expects that what he presents in the report would give some commitments towards the direction of the Ashiri. Though for Chelsea, it is quite a noble idea and objective. In order for this report to be really professionally and effectively executed by the department, we also think that one of the challenges which the department is confronted with relates to the question of discipline and capacity building within the department. Hence, we feel that there should be an approach of making sure that you have a multidisciplinary training by looking at the kind of institution, correctional service. In relation to corruption, we are also concerned, as much as government concerns, in terms of corruption within the department. However, we want to implore that the department, in our view, must institute a search which will be informed on the causes of corruption amongst the employees and what are the factors contributing to this corruption and practices. We also were of the view that in the department, there is a unit that has been formed, which is called DIU, which is the Directorate for the Investigation Unit. We unfortunately are not in support of that unit. Because what we have seen, it might have been taken, good ideas, but we have seen that unit in the same manner as what you have a problem now in the country of the COVID. And throughout that unit is becoming a problem. With regard to policy development, we believe that we are at a stage where every department and public, through the relations building by objective, will close the gap and will create an environment which is conducive for us to engage, in particular on issues of public development. And we also need to raise it very clearly here that sometimes the approach which is taken does not assist when the initiatives of policy development is people do not create enough space for us to create that kind of policy and to make meaningful impact. With regard to the administration, we are very much concerned about the fact that we've got over 6,000 patients in corrections, of which more than 2,000 group decomposed are posts which are taken at the lower level or where you have your control. And also we were not very much happy about the fact that over the few years we have seen the growth of the economy, yet you need more capacity at the level of the institution, which has to be the ones who are dealing with the true implementation of the mandate of the correctional service as far as rehabilitation is concerned. On the audit committee, we want to reflect that the another part of the Christian is the stipulation that indeed our internal control within the Spartan which we believe that those control which strengthens. And we have seen that the Spartan also because for the past two or three financial years showing some signs of surplus in terms of them addressing how they spend the money of government. And also we must address the qualified chief financial officer who is going to make sure that also that person addresses also concerns which should be raised by Parliament in terms of the spending patterns of the department. We also need to raise that, in fact, it's not a problem of corruption, it's only that the use of the consultants is also not helping the department to further capacity within the department. We believe that one of the things that has made our government not to be strong and effective is the reliance, over reliance on consultants. And without looking at building capacity within this country, whatever this little thing, you have to go and get consultants who will charge a lot of money. Whatever it is, the capacity within this country. We believe that the department in some problems or some challenges which contracted the department is beginning to respond to those challenges without relying on the consultants. So sometimes we come with brilliant ideas, but those ideas do not speak to the reality of the craft. You know? And then in terms of the labor relation, we have seen some improvement with regard to that fact. Of concern is that corruption service remains one of the factors that has been contributed within the healthcare. And some of those really are caused by people who see the union as not as a partner, but they see the union as an enemy, and we should work to be, you know, careful. And as a result of that, many of people are paying huge money, and at the end of the day, they end up being defeated. With regard to skills development, we're hoping that the department would really start coming up with some projects aimed at building capacity of the organized people. If you, for example, if you look at what is going to be implemented now in terms of the service they establish, they are very the people will be working 12-hour shifts, and we think that we will be able then to pay people not to the same to do the same job for 12 hours, but they would want to change people around. And it becomes then very much important that if you were to take that kind of an approach, that you got to inject enough capacity within the members themselves to understand the kind of work and what is expected from them. And we believe that if also the details that are there could be utilized effectively, it would go a long way in addressing the issue of the school development in this country. With regard to the problem of the question of performance can't work without having to. By the nature of the connection, you've got to work in the team. And now when it comes to performance, I want to make an example. In a session, you've got a team. And if that session is managed, well managed, effectively and efficiently, it's because of the team work. And now once you start incentivizing an individual out of the team, it demoralizes the whole team. And therefore people feel that we are not going to work, the festival will increase the incentive muscle. But at the end of the day, whatever they put, whatever effort they put, it's not a thing to give a muscle. It's an effort of it, of the team work. Well, the magic areas where people perform as individuals. But in many instances, you rely on teamwork within that kind of environment. Also, one of the things that we want to raise in relation to digital education is that I think the department also has to comment that we have seen little incidents in as far as digital is concerned. We think that department of is succeeding in addressing in particular the issue of the current. It's not going to be an easy thing, but generally, particularly, it is a topic. And if these issues are being controlled, it means to say that the situation itself, the environment, is a much more safe environment for the inmates as well as for the members of the FBC. Thank you. Well, with regard to HIV/AIDS, it is a challenge within conditions. I think I've mentioned that I've listened to one input raising that particular matter. I would not want to raise that matter again. In terms of FBC, well, the department has gone a long way in addressing FBC, but there are a few areas where we have not seen really an effort being made by the department in terms of addressing equity around those areas related to information technology, logistics, and finance. And also the question of the women. In some areas, we are not seeing women being represented. And it's one area that probably needs to be addressed. But lastly, what we also want to raise is that we need to raise that we are dealing with what has been given to us for the department by the Minister for infrastructure development, and we believe that it will go a long way in addressing overcrowding in our case. But one of the things that we're not quite sure what the department thinks about is the fact that in 10 years' time, one of the problems which the department is facing is the higher rate of life sentence prisoners. Because of the nature of the crime which is committed in the crime, because many incidents of violent crimes which are committed, which is an indication that many of the people who will be going into our jail are people who, in quite clear, will get long sentences and life sentences because of the nature of the crime which is committed. And if you compare the level of crime against the violent crime that is committed, violent crime statistics are very high, which in our view is an indication that in 10 years' time to come, our people will be full of those who are doing long sentences with life sentences. And also, one of the
into a spiritual domain. And then to the issue of awaiting science. And to us it's very clear that the police are not trained to handle it. And therefore what would happen is that police force itself will just hold the inmates maybe for 2 hours. And those inmates most probably will find their way to the prison. Because police, by the nature of their training, they combat crime, they fight crime. They're not the prison. That's why now you've got sometimes one police officer going to a cell and overpowered by inmates because they're not trained how to deal with that kind of situation. So obviously our inmates was what they're concerned about the killing of police is that these people must be placed in a correction center because they never have been placed. It was never told that you can't go and open a cell of criminal, dangerous criminal, without having nothing bound. So one of the issues that we made, which we believe also is going to the frame of correction.
Thank you very much, Secretary General, or General Secretary, Mr. Eiji Bedboy, for the presentation. Very straightforward presentation. From Peter Dent, Mr. Shah, Mayor Eiji Chukunga, and Wayne. It's a very straightforward and I'm happy. One thing that is short, Secretary General, is proposals and recommendations. You are raising the issues, but recommendations and proposals to the committee. I'm just raising it. I'm waiting to hand it over to the member.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you. I just want to give an example of how we look at the union, as the government. You know, in war, you have got people who fly. People who are on the ground, food soldiers, infantry. Now, no matter how strong the war plane in trying to destroy the enemy, but if the food soldiers are weak, then you will fail in winning that war. That is what it takes in America, in Iraq. They thought that they destroyed Iraq, but they for money. But now they are losing a lot of manpower because they were not aware of the strength of the food soldiers. It's a similar situation in the street. No matter how strong the money may be, there are some people who are flying with planes, but the real people who do the work is the food soldiers, is the staff. And therefore it becomes clear that when we look at them, we look different. When we deal with them and meet them, we deal with them in a different way from the other NGOs. Now, firstly, I think what is important is that fact. Why they have earmarks? They must have irresponsibility. It is very clear. If they are there for only looking after their rights, not looking on the question of how responsible they are in doing their work effectively and efficiently, it becomes clear. How we look at them. And therefore, it is of importance, therefore, that when they are Abraham to know that we are looking at them as these people who are in the forefront in dealing in more than in money. And they are the favor of Christ depends on it. And the success of the Christian service depends on the staff, on the ground. So that it is they that have to lead the struggle for transforming Christian service more than anyone. So that is our team now, that we need with them. And therefore, of course, the question of their integrated work with money comes in. So that as they work, they have to have that good, stronger relation in dealing with cancer. Because we are dealing with very complicated human beings, very professional criminals, people who have got millions, who have got a lot of money. So if they are weak, being easily corrupted, and that becomes a problem with us. Now, but we are saying it is a few people there who are these wrongful people. But generally, the staff there on the ground are doing their work. But it's a very difficult work to do because I feel it's very sophisticated criminal. How we book and spend the best. So my approach therefore is that we need better, stronger relations and harmony between them and money if they have to deal with correct affairs. Thank you. That's my
thank you. Thank you very much, Bishop. What's next? Mr. Shah and then Virginia and then Mr. Chipuma.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I would want to say something. Therefore, I want to say to the representative of the government that we recognize and appreciate the passion of the youth to advocate the rights of the community. You have rightly raised concerns that the community must have. You have raised issues around concentration of personal IDs, you have raised issues around hiring of private consultants, spoken about skills development, handling of injury and duty, next issue of hand extension, job equity in terms of wage, and all of these are issues that we have collectively addressed. However, and I don't want to see people coming through prejudice or in any way. The last measure that we can take on the representative who are representing the hospital, the name of the head of the hospital, very dynamic, that individual. What's the name of the hospital? Yeah.
No.
Okay, sure. So, what's the name of the hospital?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. I must say that I was very disappointed with his attitude. He displayed great deal of arrogance. Somebody who seems confused about exactly what his role was in the country. Just as you have raised concerns here, I think that Mr. Shah here,
you know, I'm a shepherd of this committee. I can't recall the meeting that you are talking about and you are
doing that. I woke up in the meeting that you were questioning, you were manipulating the system, you were listening to the government, you were manipulating the department.
What was it?
I can't recall.
No, Mr. Shah. Yeah. You are talking about Niles Wood.
That's right.
My apologies.
Yeah, that was my apologies. However, in spite of
that I am considering. Are you saying that the financial statements of the DCF is not accessible? Because I know that the report is that I probably contains financial statements. Is there something that you know that somebody doesn't know about in the library? Thank you. I'm sorry if I misunderstood exactly who you are. Proper represent members of the DCF, not citizens, right? I certainly understand the fact that an institution we have a service management for the core management of the institution will take the stakeholders in the transition. But is that what they mean when they say positive core management role? Because I think the management will still remain responsible for whatever management decisions that are taken and accountable. And that whatever that is discussed in those forums may change if the manager of the institution feels that it is not to the good of the institution. Probably it's not a correct decision. So I just wanted to check on this one. Chairperson, I think the area that the CS needs a huge number of human resources. The department has said we are shifting from the 5 week working day to 7 week working day. And I want to believe in fact I was just checking here because I think I said something that we give some estimation of people. You know enough about it. Because if it is huge for me, it's something rather too much for anything. So do they have they quantified the temple and the number of people that would be needed if we are to say that enough staff? And also, Jefferson, I represent a rural area. The department to intensify the recruitment drive of quality personnel. What is quality personnel? I just want to get this clarified because sometimes the college president might mean some of these who are in English and I don't have those people in Bulu. They're not
certain guest in the laboratory says that not what is the quality system in the program. And Sir President, I think this is for the second or third time that the union is saying the personnel is concentrated at GCH headquarters. Sometimes it comes into my mind that maybe if we were to have a picture, a presentation on how they see the headquarters staff, because I think it has been to the staff, they must be staff in the headquarters of DCA. And Sir President, another question would be on the high. They said on the other side there are this systemic corruption, what is it? Are these not related? If we have a problem of inherent or systemic corruption, whatever, and then systemic. Because indeed, whether it is systemic or not, if it is corruption, and a person has to be dismissed, if it amounts to that. So if we have these things that are there, should we therefore say no, they should continue because they are systemic? What should we do? I think my maybe the last part one question will be on our day of performance. I heard the presenter saying it will be one person benefiting when indeed they work within a collective. And therefore everybody will work within a collective. Does it necessarily mean that the union is of the view that everybody must get a performance reward? Is it therefore a performance reward? And I'm saying the understanding, of course, the weaknesses that are in the system where an immediate supervisor will write the report. But sometimes even that report is never objective, it's true. Never objective, which is either you are my friend or you are not my friend. I give you 90% because I'm probably scared of you or this and that. So the system is never objective from the point of the immediate advice I gave because of experience. Now I just want to know as to what is the view of the human unit part of these issues are concerned. And lastly, Professor, the issue of they say the lily white, the good composition, for instance, we submit that there are still areas of composition is warring the lily white and predominantly me. And these are information technologies, logistics and financing. And I just want to ask is this situation not dictated to by our very past that we indeed in the country like we have very few black and in particular females who have these skills and probably that is why we find this in the majority who will be one because of our past. Thank you.
Question. As you see, the two issues that you raised in the one of the performance for women and yourself, you are always raising this issue. You were also a civil servant. And when a citizen is very good in writing reports, you will always get it. But that other one, who is not a good writer, will not get it. And you are always raising that for the past 3 years for you. You are raising that issue. The other one, you see, this one of the headquarters, there's an outstanding visit of this portfolio on the headquarters. We must go there to the headquarters to check that building, what is going on in that building, what crew is raising there. But that's an outstanding visit of the portfolio.
Thank you very much, Mr. President. You know, Mr. President, I just want to follow the point from Mr. President. You are to talk about the regime, you know, and we can talk about the fund, something that you have to say. But, you know, Mr. President, I think also that the union also did not try to do the process for the
go to the bar. So I remember we went to Chiba where you were talking about the Sabbath. I remember the check and said, what say? Minister, he's trying every lawyer that tried to get the better salary. From that time, he would say, shout in the church. He would say, why?
Members and the God should be disciplined.
And the point that I want to emphasize here is that there are still instances yet where a member who is a short squad is told, for as long as there are short squad, you're not going to get any promotion. And they have a promotion. So that's a very healthy thing in the life of us now trying to build, you know, a different army of. And the right member, for example, because he's going to the union member, goes to an interview, and in the interview does excellently for the manager to change his name and put the other person. You know, those kinds of things. They just are not healthy enough. Yes, the question of the system is a problem. We must level the system. And if you look at the growing trend that we have observed, you will convince young generation that is coming into the system. And they think that they can do that's not the problem about the union. It's not the problem about the union where people begin to do things the manner in which they think they want to do them. Not respecting the policies, the procedures. They will, for example, want to come into the coalition and change the policies and the rules, and then we point to them apply discipline. We do have a problem with discipline. I want to approach them, not going to run away from that. It's a growing problem. And I think we must find ways of addressing it. Because it's a threat for the bigger problem. It's a threat for the bigger problem where we take these people from. They come from the society. And currently it's a problem of society of our own children who are not listening to us. So it can't just be looked into one dimension. That's what I want to say. It is a bigger problem that I think is a challenge which we must face. We are quite aware that we will never manage to discuss it. It's not our responsibility. And I must also say that sometimes, you know, these people that cry, they write with their hearts, and people and I think the point that we want to raise on the issue of consumption sharply is that it is a fact that many people who left the department find their way to come back to the department of consulting. You know, and we know for obvious reasons, some people left the department because they were exchanged. And in some instances, I don't think they're the same people. You know, that's why, if I can just make this point, that's why as a commission, when the minister made a statement of safety and security that they want to use private security, you know, to help in policy, we are opposed to that. For the very same reason that many people who own security companies today are people who left the department, so that the department should stay and took all the resources, good detectives, good forensic guys, good human inspectors, and capacitated their security companies. Now, if we use the security companies, we will then confirm the agenda that yes, this is the government to take, the money to take. Build capacity within the country. Build capacity within the structure. One of the lines of these people who were correctional officers yesterday and today, they call themselves experts. We are experts on this field. You see, that's what we say that we will raise that point. So I just wanted to clarify that point. In relation to corruption, look, corruption is the problem. You know, with globalization, we've seen new trends of crime and criminality. That's all I want to understand. We don't understand, even the police, they've never been prepared to police at a different environment where, because of the globalization, a lot of the country has opened up itself to a lot of other people. A lot of criminals, sophisticated criminals, come into the country. So that's why we think that just research, so the department can be in a better position. They can be informed on how to respond to the challenge of crime. So that's why we think. We don't think that our members are involved, of course. They're involved, but let's research and find that message on how to deal with the challenge. So that's the point that we will raise. On the question of quality, really, we're not believing that people should not be involved from the government. I think what we are raising there is that the department must create quality work. You don't get quality work. You create quality work out by making sure that the training people is developed. So I think that's the point that we're raising. And lastly, I'm not seeing what the department is raising in terms of temperament, but I'm raising it from the background that, look, in 1995, the correctional service had plus minus 35,000 staff. Now, there were posts which were supposed to be of more than 5,000, and those posts were from the 1995. And since 1995, the department found it very difficult to even reach 40,000. Because those posts, when they were frozen in order to fund a post. You might have had a 2,000 money. And that effort is there. The department, because of the high number of prisoners in our cells, relatively, it should have been 60,000, 60,000 in terms of the staff. It should have been there. But they've been trying to reach, you know, 40,000. Given that background, that 10 years ago, you had 35,000, you had 5,000 posts frozen, which were supposed to bring the department 40,000. You had a lot of people who left on the PFP. So, you know, that's what we can reach. And also what I wanted to say the clarify in conclusion, is that when we looked at one of the reports of the commercial I think you know that they employed about, in that financial year, about 1,500 to 1,600, which is 2,000 in that same year. So that's the area that we're in. That you can't say that you're trying to employ, but in some instances, the people who are difficult to dismiss, they have not really come to the student offense. When you talk about discipline, also understand that you also give you're not only concerned about dismissing people, you also want to connect with the age. So that people must understand that when you discipline, you're not disciplining because you want to dismiss people, you also want to connect that behavior and give individuals a chance to correct their conduct. So that's the point that I'm raising already when I'm saying the number of times. Even now, if you go to the chief economist in the city, I can tell you that I can give you those statistics. The highest number of dispute is going to happen. And the chief economist in the city is held in the all the general public. It's not only correction, but the highest number of disputes comes from the no correction for claim. It must indicate that there's a problem.
Thank you very much. Not going to take a long question, but the minister is itching to respond. Minister, if you are really concerned here, now, then we think that the last round is the chairman of that.
Just to say, I'm not sure why I'm not setting on some of these conditions, but from now on, I'm going to sit here. It really makes interesting reading and listening.
Yeah.
So I'm going to sit here from now on, not as a member, but just as me. So that's true, I'm going to sit in all of them. I want to just make two comments on Lucas Manting's just two comments. One, we start seeing the number of deaths that he has put on, and also the report of cats that he was talking about, which are rare. And I'm not sure why we base all of everything that we do about that cat report, but I've got problems with that cat report of my own. And frustrating, I was there when they visited our friend, our president. So we did engage. But the second thing is the judicial effect existing accommodation that is doing that, it should investigate the issues of debt in retention of debt in prison. It's not going to happen. It will never happen. Because they don't have the capacity, they're not an investigating authority. They don't have that authority to investigate. We've got the police, we've got all the institutions that investigate. The judicial service is there to look after the welfare of offenders. Health, welfare of offenders. When it comes to investigating, they will not investigate at all. And fortunately, the judge that we have now is very clear about that judge issue. Unlike from other judges who are not safe telling the truth, that they don't have the capacity in law and the local standing to investigate. They don't have that. So I'm just throwing that out of the way, because that other recommendation that is put there, I have no problem at all with them. But they're coming to the court to me. But the investigating part is certainly out. Just coming back to my colleague here, the issue of somebody in the morning is here watching this morning night. So what they're trying to do is quite not on morning night this morning. With different people to call the police and Colisa people, you have spoken about Colisa there, and a number of other people. One of the things that came out, which I'm sure you caught up in that of the Krigel, you cannot stamp out corruption by giving more money. You can give more money to the family, but it doesn't stop corruption. It never stops. Because more money needs more money. And if you're corrupt, whether you have little money or big money, you still remain corrupt. It's as simple as that. It's not about money. It's about the mindset of those workers. So, in terms of payment, but that's not what happens with them. Salaries, we still are trying and we still try our best to make sure that. But at the moment, per capita, on all the departments, we're still more paid. Our refugees, let's talk about persons, more paid than the police. Because the transfer will check that they're calculating different things. They don't calculate the same home pay. They transfer the number of things collectively with the department. So there is a structure like this. The bigger there's no board I was talking about the structure like this. Where it shows all these departments how they are spending collectively per capita per person. We're still up there as well. The main part would be defense, the main part would be theft, justice, and home affairs. And they look at them in that kind of cluster. But that means that we're not going to try hard to make sure that our people do get what they deserve. That is not given the nice way. Because we're still shy on. The conditions will not be different, will not be the same. The police condition, not the same as correctional person condition. Conditions in defense of the state. Correctional person works in a very difficult environment. That I admit. And I keep on fighting for that. So we can't compare that on that. The issue of the court is an interesting issue. Interesting in this sense that I am one of those people who feel that lots of the courts must go to the court. I'm one of those people who feel we've got the legislature in such a way that we've done that. We've sent it to the commission. We've sent some of our chief deputy commissioners and deputy commissioners to the complaint. It's not just in Hawking. We've sent Hawking. We've sent quite a number of people to area to work at the complaint. Because we don't want to have a bloated top. We want a better managed region. That's what we're looking for. So we're busy with the police commissioner doing exactly that. I'm happy that Comrade Red Boy raises a number of things. The DIU, you will never be in support of the DIU, Comrade, you won't. So that one will have to be exactly on. Well, you'll never be in support of that because the DIU is a statutory sort of all departments. Government that says this department must have a department that is investigating it. Where the hospital goes to the report, all kinds of things. And nobody likes the IU. They can't. It's like nobody would like a copy of the property. Because they don't know where they are going to be, obviously, or there. So on that one, we should never have a I'm happy on this policy, but I'm not saying we're closing the gap. Because I think we're closing the gap. I'm very happy that you can see some improvement. That we sit down and talk. Remember the problem of the race is just coalition. We're very clear. You know where I stand. You know I know where you stand. The department is managed by the management. But we'll get our stakeholders and our partners to be with us. I'm quickly. In terms of trust, I've reported yesterday that we're sensing in terms of our service team that one of our problems is the internal audit and in control. And the work I for this department comes from me. As I go to reading the reading, is compliance, compliance, compliance. Nothing else but that. We're fighting along those lines. We've got a CFO with you, lady. She's not white. She's not for Indian origin. Her name is Nadira Singh. We got a higher commandant from the auditor general of the country. So we recruited her from there. She's now in our offices and she's raising hell over issues already. Internal audit, we've got a good person there. We've got to look at our internal audit committee. Our audit committee. We're trying to change that. There's something that's weak there. We'll discuss it together. Something weak there, we change it.
1 minute.
1 minute. Consultant, I would agree with you. But I've got to look at that. We're using those master services, but he would know much better than me. The higher representative, committee people will know. I don't lose cases. I'm still worried that we've got a big number of suspensions that I have not checked out already. I need cases. And I've told you from the beginning, you know that. Come the wrong way. You do something wrong in that department, processes will go on and you'll be out. It's as simple as that.
Yes.
I don't take no for example on that. Yesterday, they asked the question here, why are these suspensions taking longer and longer longer?
Yes,
and you were saying to me, fire them.
Yes, Mr. Bowser. We have not said
oh, good.
You. We are correcting you now.
Okay.
Thank you.
But you know the issue of particularity is for us to gather people from all over, including the Ukrainian. That's and then we as a committee will sit and say, well, this was not, this is not correct, and this is not right, and what. We are always meeting, and since 1994. I have said to my colleague the other day, give him, even if he's mad, let him talk. I've said it in the first place, but let him talk. Let give him the chance, so that he must hear the view of him. You know, as Kondre Jaylet was saying in Kulsa the other day, 3 years ago, I don't know if it's very well in the class of his mother is like a class, or Salam Kosa, you know, the same as you. We were thinking of this. But thank you very much, Dr. You know, very good. And this last information, the 2 years suspension, we raised it yesterday with the minister and with the commission. We want a list of people. How long are they on suspension? Because 9 million rand is being spent on people sitting at home doing nothing. If they are guilty, I now am saying to the they must be fired.
Yes.
If they are guilty. But if they are not guilty, why keeping these people at home? And the taxpayer must pay for him. Others are using the luxury there. But let's take the last presenter from Pulita, Mr. Gavin Ryan. Sir, you are welcome.
Developed over the last few years. And one has the impression
the digesting these pieces, even not a partially planned, in a solid and orderly fashion that will bring success in the future. Under the heading of program performance, we are advised that 5,759 entry-level officials were recruited in the period. The strategic overview indicates that this recruitment was for the realization of the seven-day establishment. One would more hope for a white paper progress when one read in the introduction the 11% increase in personnel with aim of ensuring that this department strengthens capacity to deliver on white paper on correction. It now seems as though the increase in staff was a primary of the 7-day strategy. If, however, the overview is more aligned to reality, one is when we will see significant action in terms of the very hands-on changes required to provide correction, development, and care. The other concern in these statistics is the staff attrition, and I'm sure I'm repeating other people's words at this point. The arithmetic indicates that the department lost 1,763 staff in the period, some 5% of its workforce, for the figure at the end of the beginning of the year. Reading the report, the indications are that amongst these were a high proportion of valuable professionals. And one can't help but wonder what will be the short-term effects of losing experienced staff and taking on new, relatively inexperienced people, and how this will affect the department's ability to perform. And incidentally, I was at a gathering last night and was advised that in a particular area, three professional services psychologists were leaving in the same month. It must be very difficult. Perhaps if the incoming recruits are in Caucasian with the right value system, this will in due course be helpful. What is or should be happening in the department at this time? We're in a commercial situation, and you'll probably gather from my comments that I'm a commercial person. And just by way of an apology, I'm quite pleased Secretary General John, because as he was making his comments about consultants, it's exactly what I was writing, that I'm a consultant to police, so I apologize for that. Okay. It's entirely voluntary. I don't know what to do that. From experience, I know that new blood entering an organization during a change process can be helpful. One has to ensure, of course, that they don't join the old establishment to retain the maximum effect of such an injection. I think there's a story about apples and, not apples and balance, not apples and not balance. In terms of program three corrections, we know that the Police's Drug Program was one of the two externally supplied programs quality assured in the period. The quality assurance of the two programs seems to be relatively progressed. We're not aware of what was done before, and maybe there are many more programs that were approved prior to the last year. If there are not, and the report is not enlightening in this respect, one has to question what is being done to utilize the resource that is both willing and able to assist the department to meet its ambitions, namely the whole of the NGO sector. It is good to see that 336 service providers have been quality assured, but there are only two external programs in this category. Surely there must be other assistance that the department will be taking advantage of. The report advises that both the Correctional Sentence Plan, the CST, and the Correctional Sentence Plan Revision Framework were approved for implementation at all centers of excellence. Yet we continue to read that funding restrictions prevent the structured introduction of corrections even in centers of excellence, let alone into the system as a whole. It must be entirely accepted that without policies and procedures in place, the administration of programs is impossible. Yet it seems that progress is slow in this area, not just in corrections, but generally. The comment appears on social reintegration as part of corrections, which is an interesting concept. Logic, from our point of view, would dictate that any correction would necessarily happen before reintegration. And what is needed at the reintegration phase is, in fact, developmental care, development to ensure the releasee is prepared for a changed life before he or she undertakes it, and care to ensure that
Maximum support is given the individual to ensure he or she avoids receiving or recidivism. Throughout the narrative section of corrections on the corrections development care, one is frustrated by a lack of ability to judge what is the reality of the department's progress. There are ample quotations on achievements, but to understand this in context is difficult, and this may be because of our lack of familiarity. It might be helpful, perhaps, to indicate in the overview some assessment of the degree of completion on the current progression. Social reintegration program 6 is the one which is of major interest for CAVISA. The achievement of delivery of pre-release programs to 76% of release offenders serving more than 1 year is commendable. So there has been no evaluation that we see as to what effect this has had on recidivism. The program in use is, from our point of view, whilst it's helpful, the programs are short duration and of necessity fairly superficial. We believe that a more effective method could be introduced, and we suspect that under present circumstances, what happens post-release is generally of more importance. Reintegration is a very broad area of operations, requiring a very significant resource to be effective. It probably gives the best opportunity for achieving results in terms of reducing recidivism. Yet it seems it has very little space in the report and in the overall scheme of things. Certainly budgeting in this area seems totally inadequate. Not unreasonably, the department here to focus more on what happens within its walls than without. Perhaps because of the inevitable community context involved, it would be worth considering a partnership or partnerships that take significant interest in assisting the department in this area. And of course, the budgeting needs. Facilities, Program 7, we can't comment on the adequacy or necessity for the incentive program. We'd like to offer what my managing director and Felice's program should term a lateral thought, as in lateral thinking. This may be a little like closing the stable door after the horse has nearly bolted. Looking at the department's building program and the renovation program and as part of the social development program for secure care centres, all coupled with a firm belief that rehabilitation and effective reintegration can have a huge impact on recidivism. One wonders whether there might be benefit in a somewhat different view of this whole picture. In the current ECS circumstances, juveniles remain a problem in terms of special treatment required. Juveniles are, of course, our future. And we must give them proper consideration. Juveniles, too, we're told, are responsible for a large proportion of crime. More so if the upper age limit is considered just 25, perhaps youth being a better grouping. In our experience, paying particular attention to the needs of young offenders and young people in conflict with the law provides huge difference. Is there perhaps justification for consideration of something that might be perhaps thought of as a department of juvenile or youth correction? This could at this stage, but perhaps not further into the capital expenditure program, provide far more effective capital expenditure, particular attention for the youth in every way, and result in an extremely effective corrections development and care, which will contribute significantly to reductions in recidivism. A little bit of way out thinking. While this may be totally outside current thinking and might slow down staff in some of the new facilities, the efficiency produced would bring huge savings and might actually solve the overcrowding problem. So these are forms of preliminary plans for how this might be accomplished, and it is only fair to warn that such a task would involve a lot more lateral pre-thinking and a severe case of can-do attitude to put together a functional process. The delay, disruption, and general misery caused within half-way government departments, however, might very well be worth it. We regret that time pressures prevented a detailed inspection of the department's financials, but a couple of things did catch our attention. The
transfer some 250 million out of running costs to the capital expenditure, which principally went to the Kimberley budget, is it difficult to understand, especially when there is so clearly a need for additional expenditure in the future areas from which it was taken. One can understand that the underpayment of the RIP is due to under-accomplishment, and that's not a criticism. It's obviously it's very difficult to put in place the right people at the right time. But we would suggest perhaps that both the understanding and the under-accomplishment could have been relieved by the utilization of service providers in the programmatic areas. The sum of 250 million incidentally is very close to Theresa's calculation of what would be necessary to provide its rehabilitation and reintegration process to all the major correctional facilities nationally. The stock figure, and this is a silly little item that just jumped out of the page, I think the stock figure quoted for printing and stationery, 68.7 million, is 167% of the annual appropriation show, which is 41 million. That's the equivalent of 20 months supply. Surely this is something that might stand a little bit of looking at. I regret that this commentary has been somewhat superficial and introspective from a policy viewpoint, because time is really short, and the earnest request that should be lucky enough to comment again. Please bring the other one more notice. Thank you.
Thank you very much, for the presentation. Members, we are left with 10 minutes. Then we must go to an hour between ourselves, Mr. Toro and Cindy Chukwuma. And I'm going to be very quick when you are asking your questions. Please put your questions. Don't have a long story and whatever. If you want to pose a question, please pose it, because we must still have responses from Mr. Brown, and you can have two responses, Cindy and then Mr. Shah.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think I'll just ask one question. On page 2, the presenter, and thank you for the presentation, the presenter says that throughout the report for the last financial year, there are instances of shortfall of delivery in terms of budget. And that's quite often this is attributed to funding inadequacies. Chapter 7, even if the Department of Correctional Services spends its budget reasonably well compared to other departments, but it understands generally. How do you reconcile the two?
You recommended that there should be an organizational change. How do you believe this change is attached to the diploma? That's what exactly I talked about with the organizational change. Then under the issue of the offender rehabilitation party, ORP, it is being done to know about details of the program. However, you do recommend that the department should take whatever support is available from the NGO sector. Does Kulisa have any ideas which they could now the department in terms of ORP associates? You spoke about the issue of this situation and the problems around their citizens. You spoke about partnerships with the partnership. What is it that Kulisa can offer the department in terms of addressing that problem?
Thank you, Mr. Shah. No, you two are very, very much interested.
Let me ask a question. On page 3, you are saying it's good to see the 336 service providers have been quality assured, but not only two. You know, I want to hear from the Department of Correctional Services. How many of these service providers are from the previously disadvantaged community? Because it's very
very much important to me and very much worrying. I raised this thing now for the past month, that I don't see many organizations presenting before this committee. It's a very worrying factor to me, and not only to me, let me tell you, to the entire institution now. That you know, and it's a fact, we can't run away from this fact. The majority of inmates are black people. The majority, 99.9%. Why are black people not involved in this process when we are talking about the issue of correctional services? I'm talking about correctional services. Is the department not involved in them or what? You see, we are sitting with 150,000 inmates. And I can tell you, because we are visiting prison, 99.9% of the inmates there are black. What is it that our people are not interested or they don't want to participate in this process? That is the question. We are left with 5 minutes.
Mr.
Vice,
first, and then the commission.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In terms of reconciling the underspend with the cry for more funding, I can't, because it's the words that came out of the report. If I ever have to do this again, I'll make sure I actually make a note that I can answer directly if you look at it. I can't. It appears to me, my limited knowledge about the department, that if you're lucky enough to have money over at the end of the year, rather than give it back to a client and put it somewhere else, that's what I think happened. And my guess is that in those areas where there wasn't sufficient funding, were one of those where the money was not going to go. So I'm sorry, I can't do that enough. In terms of organisational change, I don't think I'm saying anything really is happening. I think the organisational change within correctional services is happening in line with the white paper. When we first got involved with the white paper with correctional services, we actually put forward a programme and we actually called it change management in industrial terms, and it involved all those processes which you were going through and those processes that are going through now. We just wanted to be part of it. It didn't work out very cheaply. The change of management, potentially a change of attitude, and training programs which involve the employees, the members, in participating in something which they're not used to. And in terms of the VRRP, I tried very hard to find it, couldn't find it, failed miserably. And she finally got the question on.
Do you have, ideas on how to try to do that?
We think that I'm going to be very much like the part of the project. I think the part that we would play is in actually delivering the utilization programs to the inmates on a structural basis, which we've done very successfully over the last 10 years, on a very limited scale. We would love to have a look at the ORP and perhaps talk to the Commissioner about that. It's very difficult to comment too much on something that I'm not fully familiar with. In terms of reintegration, Khalifa has been running various reintegration programs now for, I think, 7 years, finally finished embassy. We must have tried so many things and failed in terms of occasionally coming back. We now think we've got a reasonably stable procedure. And we are, in fact, talking to NCCF amongst future areas, and we're perhaps assisting with the Centre of Excellence included in the village to help advance the progress.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. You've asked me a specific question about why because those departments have other priorities. We have, for example,
example, social services was responsible for probation services. That's a job. It should be responsible for the application of women, such as the work being delivered by police and addiction. But the approach to these things, and they come from social development, so I know what I'm talking about, is much more generic. And so this work of ex-offenders and social education falls off. And therefore we see that our own attempt to ensure reduction, reoffending, reintegration cannot be successful. So we have to take this debate seriously, and I'm quite glad that you support the process. I think we would like to, as we implement the offending and to take this part in a year, we should think that not as a government yet. Indeed, the offender rehabilitation part was recently approved and we said we would the marketing material going to distribute it more broadly. In fact, yesterday we also reported that working on a video. But as we're beginning to implement phases of 6, 8, and 9 of this part, it focuses more on the integration part. Clearly we would like to get into more dialogue and concrete partnerships with the civil society organization. So that will come. And the issue of financing and perhaps resourcing for volunteers to deal with some of our challenges within our correctional centers and our it's a matter that we want to
thank you for me. Yeah, so it's also to help with this volunteer to correctional supervision out there to get these people out of prison and have volunteers to pay them in assisting us looking after this parole outside. And but let me say there was a call already from Marwato to say that we must come to the meeting. But let me thank the top group, Kulita, Mr. Lindsay, for the presentation and all the other people who have presented to us. We really appreciate the work that people are doing and the interest that they show in the work of correctional services and in Parliament in particular. We must. It's the duty of all of us to participate and to help. As said before, the government has come with recommendations and proposals how to tackle this issue that they have raised, because they are also on the ground. They know what is going on. We are being presented that we are interacting with the inmates, with the staff there, and they are telling us that the issue that Bishop Toroy has raised is true. What he said. But you see, when we visit prison, we never interact with, and I'm avoiding that, I will never interact with people. This is popular, this is, what is the other? PSA. When we go there as a committee, we deal with the staff. But this particular person has said there is an instrument. No, I am representing Popcorn. And I'm avoiding it. I don't want, because I'm not there to deal with unions. We are visiting the prison and we are interacting with the staff there. I don't want to, but you have clarified it in a certain way, and you have agreed with the short term that a lack of discipline on. But I must tell you, as well, in the commission, that we, as this resolution committee, are very much ready and pleased about the direction that the department is going, and especially with discipline. It's no more like 2 years or 3 years before. You can see that there's a direction and that discipline in one or two of these people that is out of order. We can't say that in general they are discipline and respect. You can see the last visit of us. People are standing up when we are coming, they are there. When they are interacting with the commission.
attention. He does not have a sense of respect to this people. There's movement. There is movement. And we want to thank the union for that. We want to thank this department for that. That we can see the light at the other side of the tunnel. But thank you very much, members. We must run now. Otherwise, I'm also going to lose my job. And Bob is not going to be sent in because I don't have the union
there.
So that's can you have something? Hopefully, we are not.
Thank you.